Prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film genres.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Aaron.
This is Ethan.
How are you today, Ethan?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. It's going to be the last show for the year of 2011.
It is.
We've had some good shows on tonight, and kind of in tradition of our podcast, last show of the year, we're going to be talking about our favorite films of the past year. And over the past year, we've done a couple of shows with a gentleman by the name of Edward Douglas. How you doing tonight, Ed?
Good. Hey guys, how you doing?
Well enough. If you listen to our show, you know that we met over his Green Lantern review, and we also had him on to do a comic book film genre show, and so he's become a fan of the show, a friend of the show. And when it came to the end of the year and talking the best films of the year, I decided I'm going to go with the one film critic I know, and we asked Ed to be on. So thank you for agreeing to do this. It should make for a good show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
But yeah.
I won't be Green Lantern, though. I'll be in my best of the year, just so you know.
Yeah, I kind of expected that, believe it or not. I did expect that.
Yeah, I finally actually got to look at your review of Green Lantern and read, and I did go down and read some of those comments, and wow. That's all I can say.
That's why I got a hold of him. It wasn't that I really had one thought one way or the other about the review. It's just like, man, this guy's getting pummeled for not being that mean about it, even.
Yeah.
And being true about it.
I think you pretty much nailed it in the review, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, I
haven't seen the movie or read the review since then, so...
If you get the opportunity to watch the director's cut, don't bother. It's 5 minutes of crap, like, nailed onto the beginning of it, and it's just not worth it. But yeah, so we are going to talk our favorite films of 2011, and I told Ethan last week, I think I said something to Ed about this, that right now I'm conceding defeat to Ed, because, you know, he's a professional, he sees this stuff often, and, you know, I mean, he's got me beat, sheer numbers alone, there's chances are he's going to see a lot of good stuff, so this should be interesting. But before we get into that, we do have a segment that we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news relevant to us geeks. And I know that there's not been a whole lot that's happened in this past week.
No, not a huge amount. The big thing that happened, obviously, is director Alan Taylor has been signed by Marvel to direct Thor, or to direct Thor 2, excuse me.
Yeah, and...
They lost Patty Jenkins, and of course, that's sort of... I've heard it both ways, that they've lost Patty Jenkins, they fired her and she quit, you know, but ultimately she's no longer on Thor 2.
Nope.
But over creative differences, Marvel Studios has decided upon Alan Taylor, and apparently he is mainly been directing TV shows for HBO like Game of Thrones, Boardwalk Empire, and The Sopranos.
Isn't he the showrunner for Game of Thrones?
No, he's not. No.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And he goes all the way back to Oz. His last feature was 2003's Kill the Poor, and he directed Palookaville in 1995.
Correct.
And apparently
that one
he's got a reputation for working fast, so the film is back on track for its November 15th, 2013 release date.
Well, I guess that's good. Yeah. I like Thor, so, you know, we'll just see what happened there. Okay. What else do we got, Ethan?
Beyond that, the rumors were going around last time. I was talking about the Ender's Game movie.
Correct.
Apparently, it's now become official. Harrison Ford and Abigail Breslin have joined the cast of Ender's Game. Ford's going to play Colonel Hiram Graff, and Abigail Breslin. Let's see. And Breslin is Ender's older sister, I think. Yeah, they're joining a lot of other people that have been we've talked about on the show before, but it's directed by Gavin Hood, who did Tsotsi and X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a movie that a lot of people, a lot of big fans of the books, have been waiting for a very long time, and it's gonna be fun to see Harrison Ford jump back into some science fiction again.
Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be cool to see that. It's a book that I read. I want to say 2008. It's been a few years, and it'll make for a good little movie, assuming they do it well. And I mean, I hesitate to say that, you know, if Harrison Ford's going to do it, that means they know what they're doing, because I did see Cowboys and Aliens, and he's had some stinkers over his career.
He has.
But, you know, I hope it's good. You know, it's like I always say, I hope every movie that ever comes out is good. I just, unfortunately, don't get my wish most of the time.
And I can't remember if we mentioned this or not last time, but the whole Christopher Nolan is refusing to change, do much changing on Bane's voice.
Correct.
For Dark Knight Rises. I think we might have mentioned it.
Well, we talked about it quite a bit, actually. Well, I mean, like, okay, for a couple minutes. Now, Edward, have you seen the... you've seen the Dark Knight Rises prologue?
Yeah, I did, actually. That I had a huge problem with the voice. I mean, it was like... I mean, I actually saw it in the same theater I saw The Dark Knight and other big movies.
Sure.
And I couldn't understand a word he was saying. And I was actually... It kind of ruined it for me, to be honest.
Well, I've seen it, Ethan's seen it, but we saw it on illegally downloaded copies. Take us to jail, because there was not an IMAX theater within 150 miles of us. So I had
of course.
So I couldn't.
Closest one us was Des Moines.
Yeah. So, wow. Response to it was, yeah, I couldn't understand him.
It still infuriates me because AMC Theaters is headquartered out of Kansas City, yet they couldn't get us. They couldn't get it here. I'm like, what the heck? Anyway.
It's
still annoying, but that all being said,
the voice needs work. In the trailer, he says his bit about, you know, once Gotham is in flames or crumbles, you know, you'll have my permission to die. And I heard that as clear as a bell. So I just think that the prologue needs a sound mix. I keep saying that because it's a noisy scene, because, you know, the plane and this and that and so on and so forth. And I don't know. I'm gonna have to trust Christopher Nolan because he's good most of the time. I think he's one of, like, the better working filmmakers today. I would like to hear that prologue remixed, because I don't know if it necessarily needs, you know, to entirely drop it and redo it, but we'll go from there.
Well, you know, I would anticipate he's gonna tweak it at least a little bit, but
I'd love to see it again. I might have to download it or something, because I feel like that. We only saw it once. We got shown it once, and it was like. And everyone who saw it thought, oh, we can't understand this. And it was just like, and it was weird. We were in the same room with Christopher Nolan later, and they wouldn't let us anywhere near him. Because I'm sure someone would say something or ask him about it, and no one did. So.
Well, I'm sure he's tired of hearing about it, because I heard about this before the trailer hit, because, you know, it had leaked and so forth. And, you know, by nature, I'm contrarian, and I expected to walk out of that saying, everybody's out of their damn minds, and I can't understand him just fine. I've listened to the trailer enough to where I can, you know, I'm used to the voice and I can work it out, but like I said, I would like to hear it retweaked and stuff like that. So I just hope that he does well. And you know what, if he doesn't do it, we've had two fantastic Batman movies, and damn it, he missed. So hoping, I guess. I mean, here's hoping.
Ultimately, the other sort of brief news I've got is Joe Simon, the co-creator of Captain America, died. So that sucks, obviously, but he was ancient.
Yep.
And today we are recording on December 28th, and it is Stanley's birthday.
It is his 89th birthday.
89 years old today, and I just wanted to, you know,
hey, happy birthday, Stan.
Is it 89 or
79?
89. Is he really?
Yep.
Wait, 12? Oh, maybe you're right. Okay, wow.
It's his 89th birthday.
Yep, 89.
We do a thing, I don't know if we told you about it, we do a thing on our show called Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruth Oz. Basically, it's, you know, the people that we like, and it's the, you know, it's our show's Hall of Fame. And I think he was the third person inducted. So on this show, we have the right to call him Stan the fucking Manly, because he's just so cool. And you know, he's a lot of fun. I think he's a great guy, and I hope he has a great birthday.
So happy birthday to him.
Do you see?
That's crazy. 89 years old. Wow. That's amazing.
He's spry, isn't he?
Oh yeah,
spry for an 89 year old.
He's still doing comic conventions like regularly. Yeah. You see him all the time there. Wow.
You see, Cheetah died. Cheetah the chimpanzee from Tarzan.
Yep.
80 years old?
An 80-year-old chimp.
80-year-old chimp. Didn't live as long as Stan Lee.
Nope.
Wow. I remember watching those shows when I was a kid with Cheetah. Cheetah was awesome.
How is that possible for a chimp to live to 80, though? I don't understand
I have
that.
No idea. I mean,
I've got nothing.
Apparently chimps lived that long, or they gave him some really good cigarettes. No. That was a different monkey that smoked.
Yeah, that was the...
Bobo or
the signing one who with all the anyway and only a few trailers. I mean, last couple of weeks we've been hitting a motherload of trailers came out. We got the trailer for Jack the Giant Killer, which is Bryan Singer's new new movie, and it looks
interesting. Based off a comic book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's his next foray. And but the trailer I really want to talk about, though, is Prometheus.
Yep.
You know, it's it's no secret that we're big Ridley Scott fans for the most part, and Ridley Scott getting back into doing a science fiction movie is, I think, fantastic. I can't wait to see Prometheus. I think I can say I have some high expectations for it because it's Ridley Scott, and you know, it's a we don't know if it's official or an unofficial still prequel to Alien type of thing.
It's not a prequel. I think it's just set in the same universe or some noise like that. Yeah. Now, Ed, I saw you tweeting about this. What's your thoughts on this Prometheus trailer?
I was completely blown away by it.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw some footage and stuff at a Comic-Con earlier this year, and I was kind of very optimistic about it, but the trailer really nailed it. It really has the very look of Alien. It has the feel of it.
Yeah.
Well, and the music
it's
very evocative of the original Alien, of the original Alien trailer, the teaser, the movie. I mean, all that, and it really has that feel to it, and it looks. I'm really excited about it.
Ridley Scott's one of my favorite directors, and I'll definitely see this because this strikes me as a movie that if I don't see it in the theater, then I'm going to miss out on a lot. You know, like some movies come out, and I feel safe, like I can probably wait for them on Blu-ray or whatever, and I'll be fine. But this one strikes me as it might be like one of those Avatar-like film-going experiences where you really lose something going to see it at a home theater or what have you.
Where Avatar, I think, would be more for the is more accessible to the general public. This Prometheus seems to be more for guys like us.
Yeah.
We're like,
have either of you seen Alien in a theater by any chance? I was curious because I know you're both younger than I am, I'm assuming.
I did. I saw it at a sci-fi film fest we had in Kansas City, but I did not see it when did that come out?
It
was 79. I didn't see it in theaters in 79.
Good, because I was born.
It came out in the year I was born, and I actually have not seen it in theaters.
Yeah, I saw it at a film fest that had that's where I saw From the Earth to the Moon for the very first time, and they had Aliens on there. It was just a really neat film fest. They had like the whole gamut of sci-fi stuff.
I would have loved to have done that.
Yeah. And it was cool.
Yeah, and
they did a re-release in 2003 with I don't know if it's different.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, it was just really in like New York and San.
That's right. Is
L.A. The big cities that were nowhere close to.
Yes, because they always in New York. There's nothing. There's nothing west of Chicago except Los Angeles.
No, and that's more or less like Asia.
Yeah.
Prometheus was the big trailer. I saw it, and it's mind-blowing. I mean, it's just like, I mean, that's what a trailer should be. I mean, it really gets your attention.
Yeah,
it really showcases what they're doing.
Doesn't
give anything
away.
What
the movie's about, it just lets you know it's Ridley Scott, it's science fiction, and it looks weird.
it reminded me of the first Inception trailer.
Yeah.
Wow, something neat's going on here. I have no idea what's going on, but man, am I intrigued. Trailers aren't like that anymore. It's too bad. I mean,
I'll tell you what, Fox would be very happy if it makes Inception kind of money. And I tell you, that'd be huge, not only for Ridley Scott, but also for the chance of doing more, because they want to do more movies too. They're talking about doing 3 movies, I think. So, obviously, they want the first movie to do really well and to do more of these movies. So,
I saw that. I can't remember her name. The girl from the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was in that.
Oh yeah, Noomi Rapace.
Yeah, Noomi Rapace. She was also in the Sherlock Holmes too. That's right. But I'm interested to see it because I love Ridley Scott. I do like the Alien films a lot, but oddly enough, they're amongst my least favorite of Ridley Scott's filmography. I know that's weird, but
that is weird.
But they're great. Yeah. We have a saying on the show. I mean, you know, saying you know the least good Ridley Scott films like saying your least favorite orgasm. So I mean, they're just some great films.
By the way, is this his first movie since Robin Hood? Because I feel like he was doing a movie.
Is it okay?
I feel like he was doing a movie a year for a while, and I guess maybe taking some time off was
this
good.
One.
I don't know.
Yeah. Didn't this one run into some problems or something in development? Or
it may have. It was more of a direct prequel when it was first.
Right.
They were first talking about it to Alien. So yeah. I mean, I'm sure it got. And Ridley Scott, obviously being Ridley Scott, is notorious for being very
difficult
and very particular about making his movies. So I mean, he wants to make it just right. So I think this is the first movie he's done since
I can't think of anything since
Robin
then.
Hood.
Okay.
So.
I do remember, like, there was talk of there was going to be an Alien prequel, and then that died, and then they came out with talk. Well, actually, we're reworking this Alien prequel into this new movie called Prometheus, and then I guess it came out with the trailer that where it isn't as separated from Aliens as we were led to believe, and it's at least part of the same universe. Or I don't know. I mean, we just got to see what happens.
Regardless, I'm there.
I'm there. Yeah, so, in a heartbeat. So that should be good.
Those really all the trailers that I spotted that came out.
We saw The Hobbit, and Dark Knight. Have you already talked about those?
We talked about those last week, but what are your thoughts on those?
Well, I'll just leave it at last week. I like the Hobbit trailer. Yeah. Dark Knight, I was kind of okay with. I don't know.
Sure. I don't have anything else. Is there anything we missed that you can think of, Ed, in the news?
No, it's been kind of slow, actually.
Mm-hmm. I saw you tweeting about the Raging Bull sequel. That was pretty funny. But
that's by the director of the movie I told you about earlier.
Actually. Oh, is it really?
Raging Bull 2.
I don't know. It was in the notes, and I was like, "What? I never heard of this."
William Forsythe is rumored to be in it, if I remember correctly. That should be interesting. But unless we have anything else, I think we're going to stick a pin in Geekly Happenings and move right on to our main topic discussion about our favorite films of 2011. And we are back. We just talked Geekly Happenings. Now we're going to be talking films of 2011. Just arbitrarily, I do know that... you know, by the numbers, this is an interesting year because we had 28 sequels come out, and that's the most sequels to ever come out in a single year. Whether that's good or bad, okay, it's bad, but it just kind of shows a lack of originality. The top grossing...
Does that include remakes or reboots?
I don't know. That's sequels, so I imagine not. That I'm just pulling this... Excuse me, I'm just pulling this... I'm just pulling this information off of Wikipedia. Granted, they are not always the most reliable, but that is something I've heard, and it says 28 sequels, and I do know that as far as, you know, by the numbers, the top film of the year, money-wise, was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, with a total gross of $381 million, all the way up to the number 10 was Captain America the First Avenger, at $176 million. Now, those are just by the numbers. Now, Ethan, Ed, what were your impressions of the films that came out this year?
Me, personally, I think we got a lot. I think we got better quality movies this year.
Yeah, than the previous year.
Especially, and my main movie time going is the summertime, obviously, and as it is for most people. And I just remember last year, the summertime, we had some good movie, like a good movie or two, and some okay, and then a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
This year we predominantly had good, fun, entertaining movies.
I'd say so.
I mean, that's my feeling on the subject.
Yeah, I do know. Go ahead, Ed.
Oh, no, I'm just saying I'm kind of mixed. I feel like there were a lot of good movies. I don't know if I really say there's a lot of great movies this year. But I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, the movies this year, because there were sequels, I might have had higher expectations maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think there were a lot of more surprises this year. There were a lot more movies I didn't think were going to be good, ended up being good.
Yeah.
And generally, I thought it was a decent year. It wasn't like I wouldn't leave this year saying, okay, there's no movies I'll ever see again.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought there were some very, very, very good movies that came out this year. I do know that there were some disappointments, especially, you know, amongst us in the podcast. I know that we were not particularly pleased with, like, you know, Green Lantern. I know that I personally wanted to kill people after I saw Your Highness. I thought that was just an awful movie.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking movies that were bad. I mean, there were some bad movies in here. I think after going through and ranking my stuff, I think the one that fell dead last for me was Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
It was just so awful.
Yeah, it's pretty boring.
So,
pretty boring.
Yeah, I mean, it was a better year. There were some movies that came out that were better than I was expecting them to be, you know, like Conan the Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
And still not good, but not, you know, not like shoot myself in the face bad.
Yeah, and there's stuff like, you know, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 2, that was way better than I anticipated it to be, and I anticipated it to be pretty good, and it was better than pretty good, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was happy to see that. I do know that I had I had an interesting time making this move, making this list, because, you know, Ethan said that he just sat down and, you know, wrote down the movies he saw this year, and I sort of did it that way, but I just kind of pulled them out of my head, because, you know, I could think of them off the top of my head. But what I initially thought was going to be my number one didn't wind up being my number one, and the one that did wind up being my number one, it actually snuck its way up from like number four or five. I mean, it just, nice. Like, the more I was weighing it against the other movies, the more I realized how much I did indeed like it. And there's actually a few surprises on this for me, and I just think it's weird because it's my list, I'm writing it, so it shouldn't be a surprise, but it really surprised me. Like, some of the, I do have some sins of omission on here.
I had a few surprises pop up on mine, some stuff that ranked higher than I thought I would, and things that's like, okay, did I like this one better than that one? Yes. And, you know, things shuffled around. I was like, all right, we'll run with that.
Was it? Yeah. See, one of the things, I keep a running list throughout the year, which is kind of like necessary.
Yeah, well.
And so sometimes during my year, I lost my list, and I probably lost a good amount of movies, but I kind of already had, pretty much knew what the, but like, that's the thing. I keep a running list, so every time I see a movie, I add it to the list where it is on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier at the end of the year to just kind of look at the list and say, okay, these are going to be the ones. It's done.
And we should mention going into this that, I mean, I've seen 26 movies that came out this year.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was roughly that.
But Edward has us both blown completely away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can add Ethan and I's numbers together and then double it, and it would be around where Ed is.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Edward's talking. You were saying it was about 300 or so movies.
That's about average. Yeah, that's about average for me. And I have to remember, I also go to film festivals, so I'll see like 25 to 40 movies there, and some of them don't come out. And actually, I only will include movies that actually got a theatrical release.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, we'll just mess with that. I do know that I said to these guys that there are some movies that I'm positive that if I see, they would probably offset my list. Like, I haven't seen a lot of the movies that are like this year's, you know, Oscar contenders.
Yeah.
Like I haven't got a chance to see Hugo yet, and I really want to see that. I haven't got a chance to see J. Edgar. I know. Yeah. I understand it's not that good, but I still want to see it. I haven't seen several movies, but as it stands right now, these are my favorites of the ones that I've seen. So, I mean, we're just going to go from there. And I also said that, you know, I gave up a long time ago with, like, you know, trying to, you know, put any terms of greatness to these movies. I think this movie is better than this one. No, it's what I like, because I can't look at two great movies and say which is better. I mean, that's not what I do. I'm not a trained film critic in that sense. So I'm just going to say the movies that I enjoyed the most. And
I have a quick question for you guys, if I may.
Please.
Which of the top 10 movies, grossing movies, how many of those 10 have you seen, just out of curiosity?
Okay, I saw Harry Potter. I did not see Transformers. I did not see Twilight. I did not see Hangover. I saw Pirates 4. I did not see Fast 5. I did not see Cars 2. I did see Thor, and I did not see Planet of the Apes. So I saw...
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including Captain America.
Yeah, I also only saw 5.
It was probably one.
For me, I saw Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Transformers, Pirates of the Caribbean,
I saw 6.
Thor, and Captain America.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, actually, I've seen 8 of them. I missed Twilight, or I skipped Twilight, and I missed and skipped.
Yeah, I don't
Cars
think you probably
two.
Missed it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
that.
I actually want to see Twilight, because I feel like I'll have to see part two. It was like, this is the first Twilight I missed, because I didn't review it, just because I couldn't make the screening, and I just haven't made an effort to see it, so I'll see it on DVD or something.
I saw the first 3, and they didn't do it for me. Actually, next week, we're talking vampire movies.
I have a premonition that it involves sparkling.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I'm a 30-year-old man, and I've read the Twilight books, and I didn't like them. And the movies are not even as good as the books, so that's saying something. That's saying, but out of the top 10, it looks like we've both seen about 5 or 6, and you've seen 8 of them, which sounds about par for the course, considering you see a lot more movies than we do. But why don't we just get this rolling, Ethan? What is your number 6 favorite film that you saw this year?
Well, going through and ranking this, and you know, reiterating to our listeners that this is, you know, movies that are ones that I enjoyed the most this year.
Mm-hmm.
I rank number 6 as the Duncan Jones directed Source Code.
Didn't see it.
I really thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I mean, yeah. and we talked time travel on this show before with Monty Cook, and this movie just did a great job of doing time travel and having the nod to Quantum Leap in there, and making sort of a fun, smart movie that I really enjoyed watching. That had I think a very fun concept to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't too over the top, too in your face. It was just you have this source code, you time travel, and you know you get these 18 minutes of this dude's life, and there you go. Was it one of the best time travel movies I've seen? No, but it was a good movie.
One of the best time travel movies you've seen this year?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. That was actually my number 9 movie. It didn't make my top 6, but it is my number 9 movie of through the year. So
it's good. I
don't have anything
really
against it. I just haven't seen it. I mean, this.
Yeah, and I'm looking at its gross, and I'm pleasantly surprised it made domestically $54 million.
Do you know what its budget was?
$32 million.
Oh, so. Wow! So it made some money. Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, so good job on that. I thoroughly enjoyed Source Code, Duncan Jones. I haven't seen Duncan Jones' other movies, that other movie that he did.
Oh, we didn't see Moon yet. Oh, you got to see Moon.
I've heard good things about that.
But I thoroughly
enjoyed Source Code. Was that the one with the two moons?
With Moon?
No, that's another Earth.
Well, oh, yeah. Was that good?
Moon's the one with Rockwell, Sam Rockwell.
Oh, wow. I did want to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. It has two Sam Rockwells. Not a spoiler, but it has two Sam Rockwells. If that's a spoiler. I don't know if it's a spoiler or not.
Yeah,
but.
I do want to see it.
Edward, I'm a cat guy, and the next time I get a cat, I'm going to name it Sam Rockwell off of the supposition that Sam Rockwell is a good enough actor to we could play a cat, because he's just one of my favorite working actors. So I had no idea. I should absolutely check that out. Moon?
Yeah.
Okay. Moon. When did that come out?
3 or 4 years ago, maybe. Yeah. Maybe 2008, 2009, maybe.
Very good. I'll totally check that out.
Yeah, and Source Code, if Source Code is any indication on how Duncan Jones can do a good movie like that, I'm all up for Moon. And Source Code, that was finally good to see Jake Gyllenhaal be in a good movie again.
Well, he's sometimes
good. So, there we go.
Cool.
By the way, speaking of, we spoke about Alien earlier, and if you'd like those kind of movies, Moon is definitely in that vein.
Okay.
Those, that kind of thing. So, just for reference.
Wow, Sam Rockwell and something that gets that kind of. Oh, excellent! I'm there. I'm gonna try to find that as soon as possible. Okay. Well, very good. Ed, what did you put down for your number 6?
My number 6 movie is actually one of the two movies that got a wide release, and it's actually in theaters now. And it's David Fincher's *Girl with a Dragon Tattoo*.
Uh-huh.
I have not read the books yet. Heard nothing but good things about them.
Yeah.
But I saw the Swedish movie a couple years ago, or maybe it was even last year. It was last year.
Mm.
Swedish movie last year. I really liked it a lot. Had some problems with it, but did like it. Fincher's version of it is pretty much the same story, but it's basically David Fincher, and he basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a terrific screenplay.
Well, and Fincher's a fantastic director, so.
Yeah, he's great, and the screenplay is just like. It's really almost a perfect screenplay, and he got Rooney Mara, who's a fairly new actress, to play the role of Elizabeth Salander, who's sort of like a cyberpunk, very damaged young woman who kind of works with Daniel Craig's character to solve a mystery. And it's the same story as the other movie. It's paced a lot better. It goes on a little bit long. It is like about 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 40 minutes, and it's definitely didn't need to be. But I was just really blown away by that, and I think I really... I mean, I like David Fincher a lot. I think, you know, he makes great movies. And this movie was definitely in the vein of like Seven and Zodiac. It was nice. Kind of like a triad of movies right there. And this really kind of just added into that. So
I'm really torn with this movie. I would really like to see it. But as I haven't read the books. I haven't seen the original Swedish version. But as I understand it, at least in the Swedish version, there's kind of it's an intense movie. Like there's an intense rape scene, stuff like that. And. It's things like that. I'm not sure if I really want to see a David Fincher version of that type of thing. And so I'm torn about seeing that in theaters and sort of waiting around for it to hit DVD.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. I mean, the rape scene in this one, it does have it in there. It's not as intense. I mean, the one in the Swedish movie is almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
This one, but it's still pretty disturbing, and it's supposed to be, so...
Well, I mean, rape isn't a good thing.
Well, no.
So,
yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, I mean.
Yeah, but this is a movie I definitely want to check out at some point.
Yeah,
and our love of David Fincher is well documented as well. So.
I have seen.
Speaking of Alien, he did Alien 3.
Yeah.
This is all going back to Alien today.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Sometimes you can hear us scream? Or I got nothing. I got nothing.
Can this be the alien show? Can this be the alien movie show also?
Sure, why not?
We cut it to be an alien movie show?
I guess. Why not? Sure. I have seen the Swedish version. I've seen all three of the Swedish movies.
Oh,
They're all streaming on Netflix, so it's no big deal. I read the first book, and I wanted to read the other ones, but I couldn't find them. And I want to see this movie, but it just probably isn't going to happen in the theater because I would need to go with my girlfriend, and she's a big fan of the Swedish ones, and she doesn't know if she really wants to see this, you know, because it's done by, you know, almost Academy Award winning director David Fincher, and I'm trying to explain it to her, honey. That's not how it works. This isn't Spielberg. I mean, you know, I love Spielberg, but you know. David Fincher is not going to pull any punches, and we'll just have to see what happens. But I have not seen it. I want to see it. I will definitely see it on DVD, and I might even be able to sneak to the theater to see it. But it's a good one. So
I like how you call him almost Academy Award winner.
Well, I mean,
David Fincher. I'm sure he loves that.
Well, you know, I think on our Oscar. I thought that he deserved to win director over Tom Hooper last year. I thought that King's Speech was the better movie, but I do think that Social Network was a better directed movie. But you know, hey, I love David Fincher, and I have for a very long time. So,
and to my. I've never actually, to my dismay, regret, I guess, I've never actually seen Seven. So
you've never seen Seven?
Ow.
Wow, okay. Dude, that's a good movie.
Seven Moon, you got to get them on Netflix right now.
Yeah. I've seen Seven many times. I used to own it on DVD and stuff. Bringing it into my number six, Ed said that he limited himself to theatrical. I did not have the benefit of seeing 300 movies. But at the same time, I don't feel bad sticking this one on my list, but because it is direct-to-DVD.
Oh.
It was actually the DC animated Batman Year One. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if you liked it. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. It's my list. I hope you saw it. I hope you loved it. But I really liked it because Batman Year One is my favorite Batman graphic novel. Obviously, it was before Frank Miller went insane.
Yes.
I do think that it really captured the essence of the comic book a lot.
It's a great adaptation of it. It's not my favorite one they've done, but it is a great adaptation.
It's up there with me. I mean, you know, I really liked the Under the Red Hood, but I just think that the thing that I always loved...
I think I just had more fun with Under the Red
Hood. Oh, sure. It probably is more fun. But I think the thing that always made me gravitate towards Year One is I've never seen, read anything a better depiction of Gordon than what he was in that.
Ooh,
and
I'll give
that,
you that. Yeah.
Really makes me like this one a lot. Oh, yeah. And I think that it's one of the better DC animated movies. You know, there's always going to be the argument that, Under the Red Hood is maybe more fun, or, you know, it came more out of left field because you had John DiMaggio doing the voice of the Joker. But, yeah, at the same time, this is like an artiste one, because this is very faithfully adapted from page to screen, and it's amazing how well it did end up working. And, you know, especially with some of the unfamiliars in it, because, you know, you didn't have Kevin Conroy doing the voice of Batman. You didn't, you know, and I don't remember the guy that does Jim Gordon in the cartoon, Bob Haskins, I don't know, Haskins, I don't remember his name. But it unfamiliar territory, so it didn't have that kind of oddball feeling of some of these DC animated movies where you have Kevin Conroy playing Batman, but a different kind of Batman than what you're used to. But I really liked it. I think it's worth a look. Have you not seen it, Edward?
I'm embarrassed to say I've not seen any of the DC animated movies at all, even though I actually own and have read most of the comic. I mean, I own the individual Year One comics in comic form. But I've not seen it. I have a question. Is the animation at all like David Mazzucchelli's artwork at all?
Spot on.
Is it really?
Spot
wow.
On.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very good adaptation.
It looks like the pages are moving.
Okay.
I mean, it's really good. If you get a chance, check it out. I mean, I loved it. I was just watching it all the way through. I mean, and there wasn't even any, like, damn, I wish they would have left that in the books. Because, like, it was, you know, pretty much, you know, frame for frame, page for page, adapted to the movie, and it was really cool. I liked it a lot. That's why I picked it as my number six. I know last year when we did this, I think I picked Under the Red Hood as my number six or my number 10 or something like that. But I really like both of these, and to me, it is good enough to where it warrants this. I mean, if I have to put, you know, Sucker Punch or, you know, Your Highness on here, no, I'm not going to do it. I'll put on Batman Year One because I really enjoyed it.
Oh, cool. So, I'll check it out.
Nice. All right. What's your number five, Ethan?
We were talking earlier about things that we saw this year that sort of surprised us, and this is one that sort of surprised me how high it made on how it made it onto my list. You know, and it is the let me find the
2011.
Yeah, the 2011, Glenn Ficarra and John Requa directed Crazy Stupid Love.
See, wow. Didn't make my list. I liked it, though.
You know, I went to this movie really, it was a, you know, my fiance wanted to go see it, so, you know, there I go, and I was pleasantly surprised by it. I thought it had a nice story, had a nice message. The acting in it was pretty good, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, most rom-coms for me sort of make my brain turn off, and this one really didn't. It was actually an enjoyable, fun movie. Sort of reminded me a lot of like Father of the Bride type of movie.
You know, it reminded me of something like, oh, maybe Dan in Real Life, or and I'm intentionally linking it to other Steve Carell movies, like Dan in Real Life or Little Miss Sunshine or something like that. Mm-hmm. I did like it. I'm not saying it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. My thing about it was I kind of sniffed a good movie there because of Julianne Moore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to say she doesn't do bad movies, but the fact that she was in this movie really made me like sit up and kind of take notice of it. And I watched and I liked it, but there's other films I like better, but I'm glad that you did like it as much as you did.
Of the movies I have seen, it made it, I was surprised that it made it to number five on my list, and I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, so.
Did you see this one?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the movie, actually. Yeah. I guess I'm in the lonesome, because I felt like, I don't know, I wasn't a fan, and I actually kind of like romantic comedies. I actually like the directors. I like what they've done before. And I like Steve Carell. I like the whole cast.
Sure.
Just like something about the movie was just trying to be Love Actually, and it kind of like was very. I mean, I liked some of the stories.
Love Actually is one
others.
Of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and I haven't actually seen Love Actually.
I love Love Actually.
There you go, another one.
Love Actually. It's I am actually very sad because it's something I try to watch every year at Christmas, and I didn't get to watch it this year. But I guess you don't have to watch it around Christmas. It just kind of helps. But
yeah, but I like the Steve Carell stuff. I liked. But the problem is it had so many stories, and I didn't like the kids at all.
No.
And just the way it was kind of came together, and it had this big speech at the end. I really got kind of annoyed by the whole thing. I'm actually just looking at my review right now, and there's a lot of negative comments on there about everyone else loved this movie. Why didn't you love it? And I'm like, read the review. It says right there why I didn't love it. So there you go.
Who's the hunky dude in that one?
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I wanted to punch him in the face. Yeah. I didn't like him in that. Which is weird, because I usually really like Ryan Gosling. And I didn't like his character in the movie. What was dumb about it was like you were supposed to like fall in love with him, but I was like, man, am I learning to hate this guy more and more and more. But I thought it was a sweet little movie. I mean, it doesn't deserve like a lot of praise sung onto it, but it's also not awful. I mean, I've certainly seen worse movies. So
I was actually surprised. I get a lot of screeners as in critics groups. And I was actually surprised they didn't send out that screener as part. I would think that would be a movie that they probably could have gotten. You know, maybe a supporting actor nod or like a screenplay. Yeah. And they didn't send it out as a screener. I'm kind of really shocked by that, actually. Because I would think that Warner Brothers, I mean, enough people liked it to try to, you know, get it out there. But I don't know.
Well, maybe they're going to put their eggs in a different basket. That's weird.
Oh, no, they are, definitely. But like, it wouldn't have cost them that much money. And the movie did pretty well that they could have gotten it out there.
Cool.
So.
Very good. What's your number five, Ed?
Okay, my number five has not been released most places. I think it's just New York, L.A. right now. It's called In the Land of Blood and Honey.
I want to see that.
It's actually directed by someone you'd be shocked by, but Angelina Jolie directed it, and she wrote it. And it's a movie about the Bosnian War, and it's a kind of a war romance, but it's sort of the romance is countered by a lot of really violence and women being raped and used as human shields. But it was very powerful. It was very... You know, first of all, because the Bosnian War hasn't been shown as much on film.
Yeah.
And also because it's a really well-made film by someone who has not written or directed a film before like this. So it's kind of like, to watch this film, it reminded me of The Pianist, just to give you some kind of level of...
Wow.
It reminded me of The Pianist. It was like
I
one of these
really
movies
liked that movie.
So powerful. And then you see it's written and directed by Angelina Jolie and you go like, wow, where did this come from?
I have a long and sordid history with Angelina Jolie. I used to just despise everything she did. And
oh, wow.
I still think that it's been a while since I've seen it, and maybe my hate and vitriol's covered it up, but I thought that her Oscar win was very, very, very unjust. I didn't think she deserved it at all. Mm-hmm. But you know,
it was very early. It was very early in her career. It kind of like it did feel like very like not earned in some ways. Yeah.
Well, it isn't even that. If I remember right, she was up against Chloe Sevigny or whatever her name is in Boys Don't Cry, and I thought that she was the standout in of that year. And I used to, you know, hate everything that Angelina Jolie has done, and I've since tamed on it because I do like a lot of the philanthropic work that she does. And you know, it's obvious to me that, you know, that somewhere under all the makeup and the Hollywood glamour, there's a good person and a good heart. At least I hope, and that's just what I'm going to stick to because thinking otherwise. But this is something that I heard of because somebody sent it to me as a friend of mine, Tyler, sent me a link because he knows how much he used to hate Angelina Jolie. And I'm like, I started reading it, and I'm like, this sounds interesting. I would totally check it out. But you say it's good, and it feels like
it's good. And as actually watch it, I mean, I don't know. They did an English language version. Mm-hmm. I personally hope they don't release it. Because I think I actually saw a trailer in English, which I didn't like as much. And I feel like the English, you know, I think it really should be seen in the native language with subtitles. And I know they're going to release it in English because that's what happens. You know, it's just like they know it'll make more money if they just release it in your area in English. But I don't think they should. I think it's like one of those things like dubbing anime. It's like, no, it should be seen in the native language. That's what it was meant. And I was really impressed. And it's funny because she did this movie called Beyond Borders years ago, which was terrible, by the director of Green Lantern, funnily enough.
Mark Hamill.
And it's funny because this is kind of like her version of that kind of movie, but it was so much better. So
nice. Very good. And you know, you threw that out there with that you compared it to The Pianist because I really, 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 really dug The Pianist, and those of us whose memory stretches back that far remembers when it was up for all the Academy Awards. And I remember being just disgusted with everybody saying that, you know, that Polanski didn't deserve it because a long time ago he statutorily raped a child. And A, she says that she's forgiven him, and B, that has nothing to do with how well you rape him. direct a movie. And I thought it was a wonderful, really, really, really good movie. So I'm totally there because I was already interested, but you comparing it to a movie that I liked as much as I did, then cool.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully it'll open in your area. If not,
there's always DVD and Blu-ray. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on to my number five at this point.
Yep.
And this is a double surpriser for me because I'm surprised that it's as low on my list, meaning I'm surprised it's not like my three or two or something like that. And it's my comic book movie, but the thing that really surprised me about it was the comic book movie that wound up making my list because I ended up choosing the Kenneth Branagh directed Thor, which really surprised me because I think the Captain America is a really fun, good, well-made movie. Mm-hmm. I'm in the
Thor's number seven on my list.
I like Thor. Thor's the only comic book movie that made my list. It's my favorite of the comic book movies that came out this year. It just comes down to the fact that I think that, you know, maybe, like, I'm definitely in the minority. I was not a fan of First Class, and I'm glad if other people are, but I'm not. But, I don't know how to explain it. I thought that Captain America was a very well-crafted movie. I think it's a lot of fun to watch. There's just too much wrong going on with me in First Class for me to really take it too seriously, and I'm not a huge X-Men fan to boot. But, you know, when it came down to it, I just liked Thor better. I want to watch it more often than I want to watch Captain America. I
really enjoyed Thor. I agree with you definitely on the production of that movie.
When I was editing my shows today, I put it in for background noise and pretty eye candy, and it just turns out it's the kind of comic book movie that I want to see, which is weird because I thought that Captain America was the better movie, and then I started looking at my list, and I'm like, no, I like Thor better. I mean,
I'm glad to hear that because Thor was my number 11 movie of the year, and that's like again 11 out of 300.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm a huge comic book fan and not a very big Thor fan, and I've seen the movie I'd say about four times now.
It's just really enjoyable, and I just keep coming back. This is my dark horse to myself. I could not believe that Thor beat out, you know, all these other comic book movies that, you know, I certainly thought that I thought that Captain America was the better movie, but apparently I don't, and I'm okay with it because I really like Thor. I thought that Chris Hemsworth turned in a career-changing performance. I mean, obviously, you know, more than the opening 5 minutes in Star Trek, so yeah. I can't give Natalie Portman the pass, but there's just too much more good stuff going on for me to really, you know, really care too much about.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Oscar winner, but yeah, it's a great fun movie.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, I think besides Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston as Loki, I mean, Anthony Hopkins as Odin is perfect.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Warriors 3.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, like, Kat Dennings was very funny. I mean, I don't know. I like the movie
Dennings,
a lot.
Kat Dennings was a real standout in it. Because, you know, you walk into this movie with Thor and Loki and Odin and Sif and blah, blah. And then there's this silly little girl named Kat or whatever her name was a lot of, or Darcy, I think was her name in
Darcy,
the movie.
Right.
What was just like this really fun standout character.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that that ended up making me put it over Captain America especially was the Warriors 3. And I like Captain America, but I just walked out of that movie feeling like I had a bunch of Bucky shoved down my throat. Like, mm-hmm. he really felt forced in the story, and I felt that the Warriors 3 and the supporting cast in this one were really organic, and it was a lot of fun to
meet them. For me on Thor, I thoroughly enjoyed Thor. I loved the hell out of it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
But the thing that I really enjoyed was Tom Hiddleston as Loki.
I thought he was brilliant, did
a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a very because generally you get you say, okay, you're going to be playing a villain in a comic book movie, then you immediately go, okay, I need to chew on the scenery, I need to be a bit over the top. Whereas I think he came in and played it very low key. And
he also played
a really good job.
Human. I mean, if I wanted to be a son of a bitch, I would say he wasn't over the top like he was in the comics, but that was so unexpected. It was it was refreshing.
Because you really felt for him, and he was a very dynamic villain, mm-hmm. and not that I am evil and want to rule the world. Yep. I mean, and the villain. And you know, Red Skull in Captain America. I mean, you hated him.
Sure.
He was like, he's a Nazi.
The Nazis hated him.
Yeah, but Loki, though, you're like, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the guy because, you know, he gets sort of the shit end of the stick, and yeah, he makes some bad decisions, but don't we all? I mean, it's not like you don't come out the gate going, I hate this guy.
No, not at all.
I think the funny thing is that when they did an Avengers panel in New York a couple months back, like, people were just so much more into Tom Hiddleston than they were Chris Evans. I mean, Tom Hiddleston literally got every single question, and Chris Evans was just sitting there, like, just not getting a single question.
I have nothing but respect for Joss Whedon, but I just hope that sensitivity or the sympathy that you have for Loki doesn't go away with the Avengers. And I don't know, I mean, like, for what I can understand what's going to happen in the movie, I don't know how he's going to walk away from that still looking sympathetic. But here's hoping, because Joss Whedon's a pretty good director and writer and stuff like that. So, but this is my dark horse. I mean, I'm really surprised at how much I loved Thor, but it was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
And I went to go see it in the theater in costume.
Yes, we did.
No, you did not.
I did, but I have a story behind it beyond I'm a dork.
Was it a Thor costume or was it just like some random costume?
I was Dr. Donald Blake. My reason for that was I'd moved the weekend prior. And when I was moving, I stepped off of the porch, and I sprained the crap out of my ankle. And so I was walking around with a cane. So I'm like, I have to go to Thor, you know, using a cane. So, hey, why don't I go dressed up like Dr. Donald Blake? I spent, you know, $6 on a white lab coat and photoshopped up a doctor's badge for it. And Ethan and good, friendly, you know, support. He went dressed up as, what was your name? The construction guy.
The architect, whose name now eludes me.
Thor's, but that was why.
Ultimate identity of Thor from the comic books.
I am a huge dork, but I did it basically because, hey, I have to take a cane, so I'm gonna be a smart ass about it and go looking like, you know, Donald Blake. But no, I really like Thor a lot, so that's why it's my number 5.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right, Ethan.
Me
to
my number 4. This next movie, you know, I've talked to some people who absolutely loved it, and I've talked to some people who were like, but and it's one of those movies, if you sit back and actually analyze it as a movie standpoint, it's pretty terrible. But I've been on a kick with it lately. It's the Muppets.
Okay, this is number 4?
Number 4. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Just growing up with the Muppets for myself, this movie really was just a big love letter to
Muppets.
The Muppets
is my number 3. Which was another surprise on my list.
You know, and it is, if you sit back and analyze it, it's not a very good movie.
No.
But it has so much heart and so much emotion, and really is for people like us who grew up with the Muppets going, you know, we really enjoyed it, and this is our sort of our love letter and maybe even a send-off to the Muppets saying, we loved you guys. And, you know, the whole bit at the end with the streets filled with people, it's like, I was watching that movie going, yeah, I would totally have been there.
Yeah.
You know, I would totally be holding up the signs. I would totally be rooting on Kermit the Frog and all that. And, you know, it really brought back some memories of me as a kid watching the Muppet movie and the Great Muppet Caper and stuff like that. And really just having a you know, it sort of, for me, I looked around the theater and I saw all guys my age with their kids, bringing them and sharing with them this love of the Muppets and this sort of childhood, this great childhood moment. And it merely made me smile. And I thoroughly enjoyed the Muppets. It, you know, it's, I'm not a, you know, I like to say I'm not a huge fan of musicals, but I've discovered I actually am. And the Muppets, not necessarily a musical. I mean, they don't break out in a song every 3 minutes.
It's enough to be considered a musical as far as I'm concerned.
But I enjoyed it, and I'm happy that it's made its money.
Yeah.
That
it was a triumph.
You know, it was a triumph that it was it came out at the right time, and it really was a, you know, let's go.
Had a great marketing campaign too, for what it's worth.
Yeah. And you know, it's just one of the things that's just, it's so charming that I fell in love with it. So,
sure.
For me, that's why I was kind of surprised that it made it to this on my list, and it's number 4 for the Muppets. And, you know, I stand by loving it, and it's just, I just have a lot of love and caring for these characters and for this from my childhood, and that's why I enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
Yeah, it was my number 3 as well. It was my number 3, and I said that there's all these surprises on my list. One of them was when I said, you know, yeah, I'm going to do a top, my top films of 2011, I thought Muppets was going to be my number 1, and then it just turned out I couldn't do it. I mean, it's certainly not a perfect movie, but I just really enjoyed it. I don't really feel the need to justify it, because, you know, it's a Muppets movie. Mm-hmm. It's not Gone with the Wind. It's not anything that's really needing, you know, like a lot of criticism or looking at it from a, you know, a critical analyst standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. I really liked the songs in it. And one thing that, you know, always goes a long way with me is you can tell that movie is made with a lot of passion, a lot of love.
Yeah, and it's a movie you can sit back and you can go to see any movie with certain expectations and going, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, I want this out of this movie. And this movie is just one that really sort of tells you at the beginning, it's like, you know what, just sit back. Turn off the brain, the logical portion of your brain, and just have some fun. Have some fun with this movie. And that's why I really enjoyed it.
Good. Now, Ed, I know you are not a big fan of this movie, because I did see that you're...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I did see your review.
It was a mixed review, and I think it's because the problem is when I see a movie as a critic, like all the things about what Ethan mentioned of the problems of the movie, I basically have to take those into account.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I had huge expectations because I was a huge Muppets fan, and I was I agree with you guys. I could feel the love. I feel I really loved it, but I feel like the story and some of the direction and some of the things were just kind of like, I don't think the jokes were as good as when Jim Henson was doing stuff, Jim Henson and Frank Oz. I personally thought they were much funnier and more spontaneous, and I don't know.
When I watched the movie, I left it smiling ear to ear. I went home and I downloaded all the music and stuff. And then, you know, looking back on it, you know, there's certain stuff about it that didn't work. Like Chris Cooper just didn't work. Cause to me, that really felt like, okay, Chris, you know, you got this hard ass image. Why don't you go do this Muppets movie now to get to that key demographic? But you know, at the same time, that wasn't the point for me. And I enjoyed what I got out of it.
And I got the impression watching it that, you know, they went to some stars. Some people went, you know, we're doing this movie. And it's a Muppet movie. Would you like to be in it? And, you know, I can imagine some stars nowadays will go, Muppets? Oh, yeah. You know what? I love those guys. I will do that just because. Yeah. And, you know, is it as good as, you know, Great Muppet Caper or Muppet Movie to me? No. But for me, it was nice seeing these guys again. It was like, you know, it's like seeing old friends just back. And,
right.
Yeah, it's not as good as old times, but it was still nice to see him back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it again sometime. I mean, I have a screener of it, but I just, wow. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, I feel like I really had high expectations and kind of like they didn't live up to my expectations.
Well, yeah, so. You know, unfortunately, that's what kind of happens with nostalgia. Is, you know, we get everything colored all pretty and stuff, and it's hard to live up to that. But mm-hmm. I do look forward to showing it to my fiance's daughter because I think she's going to like it an awful lot. And it was a good little movie. I put it for number three just because, you know, love and passion goes a long way with me, and it went a long way with me, so I put it my number three on my list. Mm-hmm. Bringing us down to Ed's number four.
Actually about as far away from Muppets as you possibly can get. I've put a movie that got a very limited release. It's called Martha Marcy May Marlene. Everyone always has trouble with the title until they see the movie, in which case you never have trouble with the title ever again. It is true. That is true. It is a movie I saw at Sundance this year, way back in January. It's directed by a guy named Sean Durkin, who is a local New Yorker, and it features an actress whose name is Elizabeth Olsen. She is actually the sister of Ashley Mary Kate Olsen, and yeah, she has.
This is ringing a bell for me, but go on.
Yeah, but she has like a. I mean, she had got all the talent in the family, as far as I'm concerned, because she is. Yeah. This is the first movie she's ever made, and she plays a young woman who basically is escaping from a cult led by John Hawkes from. Who was in Winter's Bone last year. Mm-hmm. And the movie...
I love that guy. That guy's great.
Yeah. Did you guys see Winter's Bone?
Yeah, I got to see that on big screen in a film class, actually, last semester.
Okay. He is... John Hawkes is as good or better in this movie as his cult leader. But it's a really amazing movie. It's a thriller. It's very, like... It involves two timelines. It involves her in the present day and her... when she was on the cult on this community. Mm-hmm. But it's this Sean Durkin's the real deal. This is a director who, I mean, this is a movie that, I mean, I could see like him being a David Fincher in 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. If he keeps making movies this strong. It is very like dark, but not in a like overtly way. It's sort of like very, it's a very subdued tone, but it puts you on edge constantly. Nice. And you're watching this movie, never knowing, okay, basically, she's on the run from this cult, and you never know when they're going to come for her. Mm-hmm. But it's not like a genre type way. It's not done like,
it's
you know,
like
Waste from the Devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like one of those movies where it's like, oh no, this cult's coming after a big, you know, it's really just very subdued, and it's very much like, it's hard to explain, but it's one of these movies that like you have to throw it in and really focus on it. And I was really amazed by it, and I also was amazed that it didn't end up on more top 10 lists this year, to be honest. So. Mm.
I'll definitely have to check that one out. That sounds intriguing. I really dug Steve Kloves. So,
you dug what?
It's Steve Kloves, right?
Steve Kloves?
Yeah.
The writer?
He didn't have anything to do with this movie at all.
What?
Winter's
Bone. Okay, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Award nominee.
Bone. Oh yeah, Winter's Bone. Oh, yeah. No, but John Hawkes. Yeah, John Hawkes.
I'm sorry.
John Hawkes,
you know where he's from, don't you?
No.
Lawrence.
Nice.
Yep.
Is he really?
Yes, he is.
He's from our right here.
Yeah, it's little.
Wow. Well, there you go. Well, then they should definitely try to get his the movie there with him there to do Q&As eventually. I don't know.
He did a Q&A at a little theater that we have here in Lawrence called the Granada.
Oh, the Granada?
Or I'm sorry, Liberty Hall. Yeah, No. He did do it at the Granada. Because you know they brought in the big screen and they had a whole bunch of people in there and it was crazy, but yeah, he did.
Nice.
But the thing is, like, I don't think Searchlight has any plans to expand it further. But I mean, if he lives there, it'd be nice if they could get a printout there and have it do it, because it's really, again, it's like it's a similar. It's very similar to Winter's Bone in some ways as far as tone, and you know, it's very very. I mean, I'd say it's a nice companion piece to that, but nice. I think Sean Durkin is just a really amazing director. So
cool.
That's good to. All right. Good.
Well, Aaron, what's your number four?
My number four. You know how sometimes we blow our load a little bit before we should on our shows, and my number four. My number four.
Yes, your number four.
I'm sorry. My number four is. I'm surprised. I'm doubly surprised at this one because I'm surprised. I'm surprised it's as low as it is on my list. At the same time, I'm surprised it was as high as it was on my list. It was the J.J. Abrams Super 8. I just really, 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 really enjoyed that movie.
To me, it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it is. It to me, it When I saw the trailers, I thought, you know, I've said it before on the show. I was sitting there with my fiance, and I was looking at him, like, what? And I leaned over to her and I said, you know, hey, this looks like an old Steven Spielberg, '80s alien movie. And then it said from executive producer Steven Spielberg. I'm like, well, little shit. No wonder it looks like that. And then I'm like, okay, so whatever. And then I saw it, and I really liked it. It had really believable children in it, really good characters in it. I really liked the little director kid. A really heartfelt story going through it with the death of the kid's mother and the forgiveness between the two fathers and et cetera. And it was overall a movie that I really, really liked an awful lot. And honestly, I wish I'd put this as my number three, and I should have put Muppets as my number four, but I already blew my load, so what am I going to do? It's a real good movie. I liked it, so that's why it's my number four.
I thoroughly, thoroughly liked Super 8.
I got it on Blu-ray.
I don't have it yet, but I plan on getting it soon. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those movies that, we were just talking Muppets and remembering your childhood. This movie, you know, evokes, obviously, is supposed, meant to evoke E.T. And those type of Amblin Entertainment movies from the 80s. And I mean, that's our childhood right there.
Yeah.
And this movie did a fantastic job presenting a great story. Yes, it's a period piece, but, you know, it works as a period piece. And it works with these wonderful characters. It works with these... I love the fact that the movie is from this the children's point of view.
Yeah.
And that the trailer that they did is... was not in the movie, but in the movie. And you know, it really reminded me of E.T., of Goonies, of these great child characters, and this wonder and this great lightness to it that we just don't get that often in movies anymore. As we always have these movies that have some sort of an undertone to it, some sort of a moral to it. And this movie had had a moral to it. It had a point to it, but it was mainly there to make you feel good and to make you have this sort of adventure with these kids and relive that part of your childhood. Because every child's encountered an alien being.
Yeah, I did a couple times.
Totally, once or twice. We are in Kansas.
Yeah, nothing else better to do.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's I still stand by saying I think J.J. Abrams is probably one of the best upcoming directors.
He's probably a little bit further along than upcoming, but he's got some good stuff coming. I did like his Star Trek movie.
What, four or five movies under his belt now at this point?
What did he do, like Battlestar Galactica or some shit? Or not Battlestar Galactica, Babylon 5 or...
No.
What the hell did he do? What am I thinking of?
He did Lost.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I didn't like Lost. Well, I couldn't get into it. That's not really
But as far as the stuff he's directed, it's Mission Impossible 3, so, Star Trek, and this, I think.
Go ahead, Ed.
So Aaron, is that on your top 10 as well?
What?
Super 8 in your top 10 as well?
Yeah, I just brought it up. Ethan's responding to it.
Yeah.
He's responding to it in a coy kind of way that kind of gives away it's his number one. But, you know,
oh,
hey.
Oh, okay.
but, yeah.
That's what I was getting at is, like, did he just give away your
I gave away his number one pretty much. But, okay. It was my number four. My number four. It should have been my number three. I really liked it. Did you really have any reaction to it at all, Ed?
I liked it. I didn't love it. I mean, I felt like it was really an obvious homage to Steven Spielberg, both good and bad. I mean, I think I liked the kids a lot, and I kind of liked the first like half hour a lot, and I liked that the trailer they made, the movie they made, which they showed it.
That was a lot of fun to watch in the end, that trailer.
When it kind of got into the whole alien. Oh, I guess that's a spoiler. But I guess when they got into the whole alien thing, like and all like the action and. You know, the horror, quote unquote, parts of it is kind of like not that great. But I think, I think it had some good moments. I don't know.
And, you know, I don't want to dismiss Super 8 at all because I really did like it an awful lot. But I think this is just coming down to the sheer volume of films that you see versus us. And I don't know. I mean, it might get into like some kind of weird existential quandary of a question. Is can Steven Spielberg make a Steven Spielberg homage film? And if so, he did. And I enjoyed it. And apparently Ethan did, too.
I have a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
Did either of you guys see Attack the Block?
No.
I did not.
No.
I've probably never played there.
It's on DVD and Blu-ray now.
I saw
Super 8 the day after seeing Attack the Block. If you guys go back now, watch Attack the Block, you will see why it was impossible to like. And actually, to be honest,
what's Attack the Block?
Attack the Block is a British movie. Yeah. It's basically, it's almost the exact same movie. It's basically a bunch of kids in a housing project who basically have there's an alien invasion and they end up fighting the aliens. It's funnier. The action's better. It's very stylish and it's got a little more. Attack the Block. I'm telling you right now, go watch this movie, okay, and then you'll understand where I was coming from. Because
maybe. I mean,
because not only me, but like basically about 6 or 7 online critics saw Attack the Block that night, and then we saw Super 8 the next day, and it really killed Super 8 for us, because it was like Attack the Block was so much, it was just so much more fun and exciting, and then Super 8 was like, okay, it's very nostalgic, and it's very, very, you know, Steven Spielberg-like, but you know what? It's just like Attack the Block is very current, and I know I was just more excited about Attack the Block, and I ended up like in my top, probably like number 15 or 16, mm-hmm, while Super 8 was nowhere even close. Sure,
and I think it was a theme or what have you. When we talked to Green Lantern, we talked an awful lot about how like the body of films that you see will inevitably affect the singular films you see, because neither Ethan and I saw this Attack the Block, and maybe, mm-hmm, if we did, we would think...
I'm familiar with it.
I've never even heard of it myself. But, oh, okay. But we'll see what happens. And,
well, that's not good, because that's why it never got released there, probably, because for whatever reason, I didn't do my job in making it known that Attack the Block was out there, I guess.
Well, you know, maybe it's my damn fault, because, you know, I've been talking to you for longer than this movie came out, and I haven't been looking at your reviews nearly enough. But I do know that every movie you bring up, I will watch, just... because I should. Because, you know, that...
also there was a show called Falling Skies on TNT, which was very, yeah, similar.
I've heard of that.
In my opinion, it's great as well. Yeah, so.
Okay, cool. Very good. So that was Ed's number 4, bringing us down to Ethan's number 3. Right?
Yeah, because your number 4 was...
Super 8,
yeah.
So no, that's... my number 4 was... my number Super 4 8. Was Super 8. This, yeah, is your number 3, excuse,
yeah,
me.
So we're to my number 3.
Yep.
My number 3 is one that I'm pretty confident is going to show up somewhere on Aaron's list here in a bit. But, mm-hmm, it's the blockbuster. It's Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 2.
That's my number 2.
We had a Harry Potter show. We, yep, talked about this movie. It's made what, $1.3 billion worldwide right now, as of right now.
A metric ass ton, I believe, is the, yes, scientific amount.
It's the 8th and final movie in the Harry Potter series. It was a great punctuation,
yeah,
to all 8 movies. It had some great action. It, as I've said before, it made up for the lack of certain scenes that we really wanted to, that at least I really wanted to see in the previous movies,
yeah,
and a lot of the exposition that we've had to deal with and had to wait through to get this payoff of saving Private Potter.
Yeah,
I mean Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yeah,
but you know, it's we've been with these characters in these movies for 10 years, and it's fun to finally see it end.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can say it's sad to see it end. But for me, it's nice to see them. It's interesting to go back and watch Sorcerer's Stone and,
yeah,
Chamber of Secrets and see them young and now go and see Deathly Hallows Part 2 and see where they are now and how the movies have changed and evolved and become better. Well, and with Deathly Hallows Part 2, it just ends the series just perfectly.
The way it should have ended.
You know, it goes along with the book, and in my opinion, I'm sure you share the opinion that it goes along with the book, but it makes certain parts of the book even better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Neville, what can we,
yep,
say? You know,
he was great.
So Deathly Hallows Part 2, just blew me away. Great movie.
Yeah, it's my number 2. I think we talked it, you know, at length, and we did our, you know, hour long show about Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a movie that I saw that you ranked pretty high, Ed. Now, do you have anything you want to say
about
it? Yeah,
actually, believe it or not, it's my number 3 as well.
Okay,
so,
very good.
So obviously, this is one movie we've all seen, we're all on the same page. I actually gave it a 9.5 out of 10 my review, which is very rare for me, as you can imagine. And I saw it, I thought it blew me away, not only as a great end to the Harry Potter,
yeah,
movies, but also as a great, it was really a solid movie. It had all the emotional impact of all these other movies I see. I actually saw the movie again probably like maybe a month ago, because,
yeah,
I had an opportunity to see it on the screen again. And I was like, why did I take out a half point? This is almost a perfect movie.
This is
the...
You
know, I was like, why did I take off this half a point? And I actually saw this movie again and sat through it and go like, yeah, I... I completely justify and back up my 9.5 out of 10.
I do think it was funny. That was one of the ones that I did read of yours, and it cracked me up, Ed, because there was people attacking you for only giving it 9.5 out of 10.
Oh, really? I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, they're all like, of course you can't give it a perfect because he's a big snobby I'm like, dude, what the fuck? This is a 7-time over sequel, and this guy that you claim is a stuck-up asshead gave it 9.5 out of 10. What's wrong with you? I mean, yeah.
The part one, I gave it like a 6.5 out of 10.
It wasn't that
and
great.
It was literally my least favorite installment of the entire since like the first movie.
Sure.
And I was like, I saw it. I I saw this one. I was just like, wow, they actually made up for that.
Yeah, and that was the thing is for me is this movie is it made up for all that exposition we had to suffer through, you know, and granted we had to suffer through it. I mean, we needed most of that exposition, but the payoff was this movie. I'm good with that.
Real good movie, solid movie, and it's so good. I mean,
it just means if you have a Harry Potter marathon, you know you're going to end on a fabulous movie.
You know, I mean, you have a Star Wars marathon, you end up with Return of the Jedi, which doesn't suck horribly, but it's not Deathly Hallows Part 2. I mean, Deathly Hallows is a wonderful punctuation. It's a lot of fun to watch, and I still think it's one of the better movies that came out this year.
Yeah.
And I think it would be hilarious if in 10 years J.K. Rowling goes, hey, I have another idea to do something, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we got to do another movie, because I'm sure everyone's going to love it except for Daniel Radcliffe, who will be like in his 30s by then.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. But I think that film series was like a rare just delight because it was. I mean, personally, my least favorites were the first two because they felt too damn American. But that's just me. But you know, but that doesn't.
It's not just you. I mean, I felt the same way.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's how I felt. But you know. But they're still not bad movies.
No.
Overall, it's a fantastic series.
I wouldn't call any of them bad, per se.
No, none of them are bad.
I mean, they're still enjoyable movies.
Sure.
They're obviously ones we like more than others.
Yeah.
But it is one of those rare gems where you have 8 movies that, it's
legitimately good movies.
8 movies, legitimately. It's entertainment. It's a good gem to have there.
Yeah. It's a solid. My number two.
I mean, I'd definitely call it a perfect storm. You know what I mean?
It was.
It's definitely good.
Really, sure. Really
so that's my number three. So that means we already know Aaron's number three. So,
so we're to my
we'll
number
back to you.
Two. we waxed on and on and on about Thor, and I love it. Captain America was just much more fun for me. You might say I could say Thor's a better movie.
I think I think Captain America's a better movie. I think Thor's more fun for Aaron.
I disagree, but
I said
for me Captain America was just fun.
You're not going to see anything here that I'm going to disagree with you about.
Sure.
I'm just saying for Aaron, I just whatever is in my makeup made me like Thor a little bit better.
For me, this movie came out. This came out in July, right?
Yeah. Like July 18th,
right,
remember?
July 22nd, here it is.
Yeah.
And Marvel has yet to really disappoint me, per se, the Marvel Studios movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this movie, I'm a sort of Captain America fan.
Yeah.
You know,
you have the shield on your wall.
I have a shield on the wall. I have the belt buckle.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, though, I was not a Spider-Man fan when I was growing up.
Yep.
I was a Fantastic Four fan when I was growing up. I was not Captain America. And Captain America is really coming to his own. Yeah, Captain America is sort of coming to his own in the last 10 years. And
when I first met you, you were just starting to really get your teeth into Cap.
Realize that Cap actually didn't suck.
Right.
It wasn't this two-dimensional, idiot.
Yeah.
He actually started having development and had depth and stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay, he is cool.
Yeah.
And so going into this movie, it's like, yes, we're getting Chris Evans, and I was really kind of skeptical with Chris Evans.
No, you weren't. I was. You were like, I think he'll be fine. You were like, you would have rather had seen Captain Jack, whoever that guy was.
No, John Barrowman.
John Barrowman.
I'll watch him anything. I love that guy. But this movie, they announced the director, Joe Johnston, and I was like, director of
Rocketeer?
Okay, I'm there. Yes, the guy's done some Dogs. Okay,
yep.
We'll fully admit that. But so is Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
But, that could be said about really most directors out there.
Yeah.
But I felt it was a great choice, and Marvel had yet to let me down. And so then, of course, we get the casting of Hugo Weaving as Red Skull.
Which was very cool.
Which I was just like, okay, I'm... And then we started seeing images from the movie, and I was like, okay, it looks like they're they've got it. They've got the feeling. They've got this pulp era, you know, golden age hero type thing down where you're punching Nazis in the face. And, you know, the only thing this movie lacked was someone punching Hitler. Oh, wait, no, it did have someone punching Hitler. And I just thoroughly enjoyed the hell out of it. And I had a Marvel marathon a couple months back and watched this one right after I got it on DVD. And, and it was just so fun, you know? I mean, who doesn't like punching Nazis in the face?
Nazis?
And Hugo Weaving's makeup job was fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed it. And this movie just really, really resonated with me. And it's you said it before. It's like there are movies out there that are, this movie's made for Ethan. Well, this was one that was made for me. So,
and
Captain America.
And maybe I'm paying it a disservice by saying that I like Thor better. I loved First Avenger. I think it's a better movie than Thor. I just enjoyed Thor more.
The way I look at it is, I think Thor was probably better directed. It was probably, it looked better. It's probably, you know, hard as nails, a better quote unquote movie.
Maybe
this one was just more fun, and this is exactly what I needed in the middle of July.
It
probably hurt my enjoyment of other movies like Green Lantern, really especially Cowboys and Aliens came out like a week later, because I found myself sitting in some movies going, you know, I'd really just like to see Captain America again.
Yeah.
And I was the same way, saying, I really would just like to go see Thor instead of that. I mean, when I was seeing Pirates of the Caribbean, I was like, I really would just like to go watch Thor again. And with Cowboys and Aliens, I really just want to go watch Captain America again. And so this movie, I just really thoroughly enjoyed it.
This is not one that I saw your review on, Ed. Did you like it much?
It's funny. As we talk about these, I go back and reread my reviews, and and also the comments, of course, are always kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I liked the movie. I didn't love it. Of the three movies of Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America, Captain America was my least favorite. Mm-hmm. I thought it was well done. I like Chris Evans.
Yeah, you know what?
I love Hugo Weaving. But I had some problems with it. I think some of the problems I had were A, the fact that it was all in World War II, which I was like kind of like
very little bits, yeah,
yeah.
It was mostly in World War II. Yeah. I felt like they tried too hard to force it into the Marvel universe by having Howard Stark in there, which I liked that. Mm-hmm. the thing. What I didn't like is I didn't like the focus on Peggy Carter, and I didn't like the fact that Bucky Barnes was so old. I didn't like the fact that Bucky Barnes was almost the same age as Captain America. I felt like Bucky Barnes was really that. If they were going to be in World War II, Bucky Barnes should have been a bigger part. And when he got killed off, it should have been a bigger loss.
Deal. Yeah, exactly.
It should have been a big loss. Yeah. And I feel like that really, for me, that was like, that means they missed the point. They missed the point of Bucky Barnes, and
that nailed something for me there. Because Ethan, we saw all these movies over the course of the summer, and Ethan was busy as a dog this summer, and he didn't get
especially
to do his
in
review.
July.
Yeah, he didn't get to do his reviews for a month or two, and he was doing his review of Captain America, and I was watching it, and he brought up the death of Bucky, and I'm like, I don't remember that at all,
right,
and I'm like, holy crap, I didn't remember Bucky dying. How the hell did he die? And I went and read, I'm like, oh yeah, he fell off the train, and wow, that's not good that I don't remember like Bucky dying, because that's such a huge part of who Cap was, and
absolutely, and that should have affected him for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
But there was so like into this love story between him and Peggy Carter. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny. There's a scene in Captain America, which is literally the exact same scene that was in that movie Amelia, the Amelia Earhart movie starring
Hillary Swank and Edward.
Did you see that movie?
I did.
There was the exact same scene with him on the plane.
Yeah, with the plane crash.
It was like, oh my God, they just have the exact same scene.
Her talking to Ewan McGregor, not Ewan McGregor.
Richard Gere.
There you go, Richard Gere.
Yeah, I
saw that movie. I was not a very big fan of it, considering I really like Hilary Swank and Ewan McGregor and Richard Gere. You're right, and there's something that occurred to me watching the second time was it was a lot of fun to watch the first time, and then after that, some of it I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get a drink or something. And you know, not Thor, but that doesn't make this a bad movie, because what we just pointed out with Bucky, it really occurred to me watching Ethan's review, and it was funny, but at the same time, I don't think it makes it a bad movie by any stretch of imaginations. Mm-hmm. And I've seen much worse comic book movies, and I've seen much worse ones this year. So
I'll see it. I'll probably see Captain America again, and maybe I'll like it more a second time. But the first time, I definitely was. I had, after Thor, I really had high expectations again.
Yeah.
And just didn't live up to them. So
very good. That was Ethan's number two, bringing us mm-hmm. on to your number two, Ed.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you guys remember last time I spoke to you guys, and you guys were talking about doing Western movies, yeah. and I recommend a movie to you guys. Did either of you see that movie?
What was the movie?
It was called Blackthorn.
I did not, but I wanted to. It's probably nowhere near us.
Okay. Yeah, no, it probably never played. It was on VOD. Yeah, it's called Blackthorn. That's my number two movie. It's a Western. It stars Sam Shepard, who is no stranger to Westerns. It has him playing a character named James Blackthorn, who is actually the older version of Butch Cassidy, who is also no stranger to Westerns. We've seen the classic Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a movie that is daringly a sequel to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, as well as a sequel to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Sam Shepard is absolutely amazing in this role. If you love that original movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, it is almost a perfect movie to say, because you would never think anyone would ever make a sequel to that movie, and then they make one. And it's based around like reality. It's based around the fact that they didn't really think Butch Cassidy died, and he lived in Bolivia, and it basically picks up with him in Bolivia 30 years later or so. He's an old man. He wants to return to America, and something happens that kind of like keeps him from returning and keeps him like. That's not a spoiler, but he basically like this stuff happens that he gets involved with a criminal who gets him involved with these other like. You know, they basically get chased by miners, and it's amazing adventure. It's an amazing movie, first of all, because it's a very low budget. It's made by a Spanish director who is more known for his writing, actually. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful movie. I mean, the way they shot Bolivia in Bolivia, it was a really good Western. And I felt like it was really missed by way too many people this year.
I just looked it up, and it is out on DVD, so it's something I could go out and rent at the very least.
And I remember you telling us about it, and it is one that I was like, okay, that looks really cool. I want to see it, and it's in the pile to watch at some point.
Good. It was on video on demand for quite a long time, but I mean, it was like before, you know, around the time of its theatrical release. But it's one of those movies I really wish people would see in the theaters. I was actually kind of disappointed when I heard they were going to do the VOD thing for it, because I felt like it would really take away from the experience of seeing it on the big screen.
Lord knows we need a good Western hit theaters at some point.
Okay, so that was your number two. Are we down to my number two?
Yep.
Well, my number two was Harry Potter. So we talked that at length, and we've already done an entire show on Harry Potter, so I've talked about it enough. Bringing us down to Ethan's number one, which was Super 8. Do you want to talk any more about it?
No, I think I pretty much touched on what I liked about it.
Cool. It was a really, really good movie, and I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. But, okay, Ed, we're getting down to your number one, and Wei, I understand you have a tie going on here.
Yeah, I have a tie for number one, and actually I know these movies will also not be on any of your lists because they're... limited releases.
One of them I really wanted to see, and I just was unable to because we don't have the greatest movie market out here, and we have a terrible market for docs.
Oh yeah, so. but actually it's funny because it ties into the Muppets a little bit because it's a movie about a puppeteer. It's about a puppeteer who actually was involved with the Muppets. It's called Being Elmo: A Puppeteer's Journey, and it's a doc about Kevin Clash, who's the actual man. Who he didn't create Elmo, but he basically made Elmo famous with his personification of him. It is a movie that, like, I think it's a perfect counterpoint to the Muppets. So not in a bad way, but also in a way that you see the Muppets and you can see a movie about one of the people who makes those characters come to life. It was an amazing story. He grew up in, you know, Baltimore, very, you know, kind of lower class. He kind of had a dream of being a puppeteer. He joined Jim Henson's group and did Sesame Street for years before finally picking up Elmo, and Elmo and the rest is history. I mean, Elmo probably one of the most.
Wasn't he one of the Ninja Turtles?
Elmo?
No,
yeah, Elmo.
Kevin Clash.
Oh no, he was he did Splinter actually.
Okay, I thought he had something to do with one of the Ninja Turtles, but okay.
Yeah, no, he did. He did Splinter. He did their mentor. That was a Muppet actually. The movies, but he's done. I can't remember. He did Labyrinth. He was part of the team who did the puppets of Labyrinth as well. Mm-hmm. But it's an amazing story watching this guy's history and watching how he came from there, and how he's kind of mentoring kids on his own. It's a really amazing doc. It's the only doc I've given a 10 out of 10 to since Man on Wire, I think. Yeah. I mean, I've given a few docs 10
out of
10.
That was a good one. Man on Wire.
Man on Wire, yeah.
Yeah, it was real good.
So that's kind of a tie into the Muppets.
Can I ask you a question about this movie?
Yeah.
There's a podcast that I listen to called The Muppet Cast, and the guy I've been talking to him. I'm trying to get him on to do a Muppet show at some point. His name is Steve Swanson, and one of the things that we've been talking about is that Kevin Clash is kind of considered like the bastard sellout of the Muppet Clan. You know how your Frank Oz's and your Carol Spinney's and people like that are your pure artists, but Kevin Clash is, you know, seen as something of a sellout. Is that something that it really touches on at all?
It does in some ways. Not, I mean, it's definitely, like, they never use the term sellout, but they,
that's my word, not.
I mean, but it is pretty obvious that, like, he made a lot more money and had a lot more fame out of, mm-hmm. you know, what he did than anything else. And I think he's kind of like, you know, you can see he's kind of an entrepreneur, but he's still, but the thing is, he's still a puppeteer though. And that's the thing. He's still, it's not like he has like five guys doing Elmos, but I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, I don't get the impression from seeing this movie that he's like one of these, you know, that he sell out. It's all about the money. And
well, it's not even he's that way. It's just that, you know, how some people get, you know, like yourself, you get unfair labels put on you because of just the circumstances, you know, behind you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, I have no opinion of Kevin Clash. I do know that he's, you know, he's really into like Make-A-Wish Foundation and stuff like that. And he does lots of great stuff for kids. And somebody that does that can't be all bad. But I just know that you know, like amongst the Muppet purists out there, that, you know, they think of him as something of a sellout and not nearly as great as the, you know, the godly Jim Henson. And I love Jim Henson. But.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they should see this movie because I think it's, I feel like that, I mean,
Steve thinks. This is just something that he told me that is a lot of people's
I can see that, but the thing is I think there's different camps. There's the Muppets, the Muppet fans who like the Muppet Show characters, and then there's the ones who like the Sesame Street characters. And people forget that Sesame Street is where they came from.
Yeah.
And Kevin Clash is stayed with the Sesame Street side. I mean, he's been a producer and a director of the show. Still, he's still involved with Sesame Street, very much so. It's a different thing, but like, I don't know. There's something about like an entertaining, you know, Muppets for entertainment and Muppets who are actually teaching kids and like helping them grow and learn.
It's a really neat, unique thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think Kevin Clash is. I mean, this movie kind of really shows that this Kevin Clash. I mean, so to say that he's a sellout and all this other stuff, but yeah, but he's also still very involved.
Bastards.
Kids,
when it comes down to it, this is one I did want to see quite a bit, and you know, the fact that you give it such a glowing review just makes me want to see it even more. I know Steve told me to check it out.
I've heard of it, and it is one I want to check out. It's unfortunately not on Netflix, but
I don't even believe it's out on DVD yet, is it?
It's probably not. No, probably not.
Seemed like it came out around the same time as the Muppet movie.
Yeah, it did. I think it came out Muppets.
You were talking Blackthorn, and it actually came out on DVD 8 days ago.
Yeah.
So, oh, there you go. By the way, I was going to say, it's not on DVD yet, but I mean, hopefully people will check it out. I was really kind of upset it didn't get nominated. It didn't get on the list for the Oscars. I really felt that was a huge. I mean, it should have been in the shortlist, in my opinion.
Which?
I was really surprised it didn't. So
Elmo or Blackthorn?
Being Elmo.
Really?
They did 15 shortlist of 15 docs. And
oh, that's right. There's really stupid ways that they nominate the documentaries. I always forget about that, but it's always a controversy every year. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
That was a huge oversight, in my opinion. Yeah.
Well, cool. And your number one B was which movie?
Well, do you want to do your number one first before I get into the second one? Because just to...
I guess we can.
Let's do your number one first, and then I'll go back to my...
My number one was a shock to me, mostly because when I saw it, I knew I liked it. When I was going to go see it, I knew that I was going to like it. The thing about it was, it, like, how much I liked it got away from me. Well, it's the Jonathan Levine film 50/50.
Nice.
I was a big fan of the Wackness, and I'm also a very, very, very well-documented, huge Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan. I went and saw this movie because I wanted to support him, basically, and it looked like I might sit through a movie that I might kind of like, I might kind of hate, but I don't mind giving him my money because I think that he needs more work. And even though since... then, you know, he's, you know, now attached, you know, The Dark Knight Rises and Django Unchained and the Lincoln biopic and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe he doesn't need my damn $7. But I was a big fan of the wackness. And seeing that he directed this movie, it caught my curiosity. So I went and saw it, and I was just... And I was expecting a movie like 500 Days of Summer. As big as a fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, I just wasn't a big fan of that movie. I thought it really fell short, and I thought that, you know, his talents as an actor were wasted. And I thought that I was going to be getting something like this out of it, and absolutely not. I said to my fiance, I could not believe how good of a performance he turned in for that kind of movie. I mean, he just, I mean, you look at it, it looks like your typical stoner comedy. I mean, like right there on your damn poster, you've got Seth Rogen, so you know it's a stoner comedy. And he brought just like this. He started out as a very, you know, your typical white boy working in a radio station and married to the job, and then he finds out he's got this rare form of bat cancer, and he takes it to a really, really dark and angry place that personally I found was shocking. It was such a really It was a fantastic performance by him. I've said before that I think that movie legitimized my thoughts on Seth Rogen, that he should stay in that kind of role. He doesn't need to be a lead. He needs to be that great supporting character. I don't remember the last time I enjoyed him in a movie as much as I enjoyed him in this. I think that Philip Baker Hall was one great scene short of like a surefire Oscar nomination. This was overall, I thought it was a great film. I was really surprised I put it at my number one, but it was the movie that I walked away from thinking the most about, shocked the most about by how much I liked it. And I wanted to see again. It's not quite out. I think I believe it comes out. If it didn't come out this week, it comes out next week or really soon on DVD. I'm going to buy it because I really, really enjoyed it. There's just a lot going on in it. You had Angelica Houston playing his mother, being a – am I right here? Yeah, it was Angelica Houston.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
She was this really – it was a strange character because she was obviously very concerned for her son who was ill, and she was – kind of overreacting, but you got it. This is her baby. The heartfelt stuff going on with his father who had Alzheimer's. Like I said, Philip Baker Hall was really good in it. Help me out. Was it
Anna Kendrick?
Anna Kendrick as the incredibly young psychologist, psychiatrist, kind of a grief counselor, you know, helping him through this because he's obviously very angry and scared and, you know, all this stuff because he's very, they gave him 50-50. That's where the title came from. Maybe you'll live, maybe you won't live. And she was really supportive, and he ends up, you know, firing her basically so he could date her. I think that, like I said, Seth Rogen was a really good support. I want a friend like Seth Rogen in that movie. I mean, he was just so great and supportive. There was like that really fun scene with him destroying, who was it?
Bryce Dallas Howard.
There you go,
right.
Bryce Dallas Howard's painting. She was a bitch in that movie, but...
I feel bad for Bryce Dallas Howard, because between 50-50 and The Help, she's just, like, the most unlikable person. She was actually almost like Loki of comedies this year in some ways.
Yeah, but it was just, like, I was so surprised, like, how much was in this movie, considering, especially the way it was marketed. I mean, it was marketed like, you know, knocked up, crossed with... Mm-hmm. I don't know, the Pineapple Express or something. Yeah. And it was not that movie. And I just thought it was so good.
Really, we could have a whole long discussion on how marketing has just failed on a lot of movies.
And this one, I mean, I'm like, pretty much if a Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie opens in my market, I'm going to see it because I want to give the dude my money and I want to. But, you know, this is one that, you know, I thought this was just going to be a compulsory. I need to give him my $8 to show, you know, the big wigs that, you know, I like this guy to where I walked away with just this movie that I had a lot to say about and I had nothing but respect for.
That was actually my number 8 movie. So it's in my top 10 as well.
Cool.
I had the chance to see 50-50 back in June. I saw it very early on.
Get to see it till like October, November.
I saw it when I went in to see it. I basically said, "Someone, I was told this is movie 50-50. Come see it." I completely forgot. The movie used to be called "I'm with Cancer."
Yeah, I'm with Cancer.
Yeah, that was the original title, and I completely forgot it was that movie. And I went to see the screening, loved it. I mean, got to see it without actually having any expectations, and it made my top 10 as well. And I loved it. I think Jonathan Levine is a very talented director.
Yeah.
really can get the most out of all the material he's given. And he had a great cast, and it was just like really well done, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I'm glad that you liked it, because I thought I was going to be standing alone here, because I almost felt like I liked it too much, but no, I thought it was really, really good. And I mean, that's like what I walked away from, is I was amazed that that kind of performance was turned in for that kind of movie. And it was just so refreshing. It was so refreshing, and it was my favorite film of the year, without a doubt.
By the way, speaking of Seth Rogen, he has a movie coming out next year called Take This Waltz.
Okay.
With Sarah Pauly. Did you see Away From Her? Sarah Pauly's movie?
Yeah, that was a real good movie.
Yeah, well, she made another movie, which is a very different kind of movie, but he plays her husband in that, and it's sort of a half dramatic, half comedic role. But I think if you liked him in 50-50, you'll be surprised by him in Take This Waltz as well.
I mean, but do you understand what I mean? Like, I don't see him as a leading man. I mean, I'm not saying that he tanks a movie as a leading man, but I really like him as that supporting character, and I don't think he's ever been better than he was in this movie. So I really liked it, and I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt, so cool. All right, what's your other number one?
My other number one. This is my actual number one. Okay. I mean, I think Ian Yalma was my doc number one, and it's sort of like, kind of like. But this is my actual number one. It's a French Canadian movie called Incendies, or Incendies if you don't speak French, because it's called spelled I N C E N. Well, it's called Incendies, but it's spelled I N C E N D I E S.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that up for foreign film last year at the Oscars?
It was up for foreign film. Yeah,
I'm glad you realized.
It was the Oscar foreign film.
That came out in 2011.
It never actually was released until 2011. And actually, I mean, I think it might have come out in Canada in 2010. But I mean, it didn't even screen in New York until 2011.
Okay,
it was at Sundance this year. It's one of those movies that I felt like. It was the first movie of 2011 I saw, to be honest, and it was such a good movie. I felt like I couldn't like just leave it off my list just because it got an Oscar nomination last year. Because, like I said, it didn't get a theatrical release until this year. But after seeing this movie, I was actually kind of shocked it didn't win. It's a drama about two basically twins. They're in their like 20s,
right?
Who their mother passes away. She leaves them a will to basically say, okay, to get the money, you need to find your father who you never knew, and you have to find your missing brother. And they're basically sent on this mission to the Middle East to try to find these people. While at the same time, we've kind of watched their mother's life story from when she was very young until older. And it is a very intricate movie. There's a lot of moving parts to it. I mean, but it's a very small cast.
It's in French, right?
It's in French and in Arabic, I guess, because a lot of it. I'd say most of it takes place in the Middle East.
I was just trying to be clever because you know you said Canadian. I've heard of French Canadian before.
French Canadian. But but it was really. I mean, most of it takes place in the Middle East. It doesn't take place in any more area. Like it's not Iraq. It's not Afghanistan. It's not Israel. I mean, they never specify where it is. It's like almost like a made up place. But it's a really good. It was based on a play. You would never be able to tell watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, like Blackthorne, no one has seen this movie, and it just drives me up a wall because the people who've seen it love it, and that's going back to when it was at Toronto last year. But not many people have seen it. And it's very, you know, it's a tough movie. It's not like a, you know, take the whole family, kids, grandma to see it. It's a very dark, very intense, emotional movie. And it really affected me. I mean, I saw it first thing this year. I saw it a couple times since then. And I wish more people saw it.
This is one that, you know, like we keep hinting at, like we're in a not the greatest film market ever, especially when it comes to docs, when it comes to foreign films. Good Lord. We usually have to wait 6 months to a year after they even come out on DVD for any hope. And this is one that I always go through this uphill battle trying to watch all the movies that interest me at the Academy Awards, and this is one that I was never able to find, and I wanted to see it. But I thought that sounded familiar, and I could not, and I wanted to see it, and now I have to see it, even if I have to, let me see, go to Canada and buy the DVD. Yeah, that's a story I'm going to stick to. But okay, cool.
It's funny because it's the third This is the third movie to get a foreign language Oscar nomination. Mm-hmm. That I actually was made my number one movie of the year. Huh? Actually, it's the fourth. Actually, now that I think about it,
that's a big world.
Yeah. No, it's actually a fourth. It's really weird because it's funny because I Departures won the Oscar. That was my number one movie that year.
The Departure.
Departures. It's a Japanese movie.
Never heard of it.
Well, it won. And then Zhang Yimou's Hero. Have you seen Zhang Yimou's Hero? With Jet Li?
Yes.
That was a foreign language nominee.
That was a real good movie, too.
Yeah, that was my number one that year. It was a foreign language nominee 2 years earlier. Then the last one is The Twilight Samurai, another Japanese movie. Yeah. It was also a Oscar nominee, didn't win, and then I got to see it like years later.
Cool. Very good. Well, I guess that's going to bring us into our list, and I mean, it seems almost redundant and a waste of airtime to say, yay, we have three different lists, because every time we do this, unless we have more than three people on, we always have at least three different lists, and it happened this way, too. I'm definitely going to check out every film on your list. I think Ethan should check out 50-50, because it's quite surprising how good it was.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see. Unfortunately, when it came out,
it wasn't going to happen.
Ear deep in other things.
Sure. I was just really surprised, and I wanted to see that Elmo movie long before I saw that you liked it as much as you did, and I don't know, maybe just the fact that you want to see it is a little bit more validation, a little bit more fire under my ass to get out and go see it. But why don't we run down our list and stick a pin in this. Ethan, what is your top 10 list?
Coming in just barely at number 10 is Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 is Kung Fu Panda 2.
Mm-hmm.
My number 8 was actually X-Men First Class. Mm-hmm. My number 7 is Thor. Then number 6 is Source Code. Number 5, Crazy Stupid Love. Number 4, The Muppets. Number 3, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 2, Captain America the First Avenger. And number 1 was Super 8.
Very good. All right, Ed, what's your top 10 list? Or top 11 in this case?
Okay, well, number 11 would have been Thor.
Okay, cool.
Doesn't count. Number 10 is a movie called Warrior.
Yeah. Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, right?
Yeah, Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton.
I really want to see that. Is Joel Edgerton good in it?
They're both very good in it, actually.
Okay, because I've been having my eye on Joel Edgerton since... I don't remember. I saw him in something right before he was in that in Star Wars Episode II.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, and I've been watching him ever since. And, you know, he keeps cropping up. Like, he was in Ned Kelly, I think. And, you know, he's just, like, kind of always in the background. And I always kind of had my eye on him. And I was really hoping that he would turn in a good performance there. I really wanted to see this one. Sorry. Good. Sorry, continue.
Warriors number 10. Number 9 is Source Code, which we discussed earlier.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Number 8 is 50-50, which we also discussed earlier. Number 7 is Rango, another Western that's an animated Western. Have you guys seen that?
I did. Ethan, did you?
Nope.
Do you think that's going to take foreign film this year, or do you think that's going to be Tintin?
Rango? I think Rango is going to win.
I'm kind of leaning that way myself, too, and I think that it's going to be considered an upset that it beats Cars 2, which I don't think is really an upset at all.
I think Cars 2, I think people will be surprised if Cars 2 gets nominated, to be honest.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Cars 2, but I know people
generally
like
it.
Yeah. So number 6 is Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Number 5 is In the Land of Blood and Honey.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm reading down my list as I'm doing this. Number 4 is Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. Number 3 is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 2 is Blackthorn. And number 1 is two parts. The doc is Being Elmo, A Puppeteer's Journey. And my real number 1 is Incendies, or Incendies, if you can't speak French.
Which I cannot. Okay, very good. Sounds like some interesting movies that I'm going to have to check out. For my list, when you watch a movie, you can take out all the, the social minutia that you want out of it, or, you know, how good it is of a film and composition and everything. But I also think that you can take more stuff out of a film, such as good friends and good internet contacts. My number 10 is Green Lantern. I didn't hate it, but I did enjoy all that we've gotten out of it just by talking about it. My number 9 is a film that I'm going to right now admit it isn't a great film, but it had something going for me that I liked. It was the, I don't remember who directed it. I'm not going to pretend like I do. It's Paul, the Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Seth Rogen movie. My thought about it was it felt to me like the way that I wanted that horrible movie fanboys to feel, you know, to where it was really homage-y towards, you know, sci-fi of the 80s, 90s, Star Wars, stuff like that. It was horrible.
Fanboys was awful.
Yeah, fanboys was awful. Paul wasn't fantastic, but it was not nearly as mean-spirited as something like Fanboys, so I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. And then my number 8 was a movie, I actually think it might have been a 2010 release, but because it was an Asian movie and because I didn't get to see it till 2010, I'm going to count it, damn it. It was the Takashi Miike film, 13 Assassins.
Oh, nice. Oh, no, that's this year. That's 2011.
Oh, okay.
That counts.
Well, I thought, okay, well, good. So I'm not cheating at all. To me, it felt like a movie that can proudly call itself in the same genre as anything that Akira Kurosawa did. I mean, it didn't feel like a pale knockoff. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I really dug the hell out of that movie. And then, you know, just arbitrarily because it was funny, I picked Hobo with a Shotgun. I mean, I got like 87 minutes of enjoyment out of it. It was probably 2 hours long, but I still enjoyed it. Rutger Hauer was funny. And it wasn't like one of those, you know, clever Tarantino grindhouse kind of movies. This was a grindhouse kind of movie that just happened to have a guy I've heard of in it. And then we get into the list I've already mentioned. Number 6 was Year One. Number 5 was Thor. Number 4, Super 8. Number 3 was The Muppets. My number 2 was Harry Potter, The Deathly Hallows, Part 2. And my number 1 favorite film of the year was the Jonathan Levine 50/50. So, yeah, that has been our list. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with the outro section. And we are back. We just had our discussion about our end of the year films. I definitely have some to add to my list. Everyone that Ed talked about, I found pretty interesting, and I think Ethan feels the same way. We entered into this knowing that we were just going to get schooled on this list, but it's good because this is a good kind of schooling because it's movies we need to watch, and that's always good. But it's been a lot of fun having Ed on, as it always is. Next week is going to be an interesting show. Basically because we have a caveat on
the... We will not be sparkling.
Yeah, we will not be sparkling. We have a thing on the show to where it just seems like no matter how much we cover, no matter how hard we try, we're always talking goddamn horror movies. And it's happening to us again. Next week, we're going to be talking about vampire movies. Last week, we talked, you know, zombie movies. Next week, we're talking vampire movies. It should be interesting, especially with the sparkly, pyred, charged climate that we all live in.
So tune in next week where with my list of 9 crappy vampire movies
and one good one.
Okay.
I still think you've probably seen more than one good vampire movie, but, you know,
maybe
we'll go there.
Maybe two.
But yeah, so that should be interesting. Is there any must-see vampire movies before the end of next week, Edward? Ed?
Probably. Have you seen Near Dark?
Yes, funny. That's absolutely on my list. Catherine Bigelow. I remember watching that movie growing up and really thinking it was funny. There's a vampire kid named Homer because of The Simpsons and all that stuff. Yeah, real good movie. Real good movie. It's totally.
And of course when I saw it, The Simpsons weren't even on yet, so that's not what I thought. So.
And hey, Lance Henriksen's in that one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the bad guys.
Yeah, it's one of those other movies that snuck by me that I didn't realize was directed by Catherine Bigelow, like Point Break, like this, like
it's Academy Award winner Catherine Bigelow.
Yep, first woman. That Ralph Fiennes movie.
I know which one you're talking about. You're talking about the one with the submarine, right?
What's that?
The one with the submarine? No.
Oh God.
The one with the submarine.
It's the one...
Wild Thing? Not Wild Things.
No.
Strange Days.
Strange Days.
Yeah, that's another one of those weird Catherine Bigelow-directed movies. But should be good. That is a good one. Yeah, that's a solid, solid, solid recommendation. So thank you for that. But yeah, thank you very much for being on, Ed.
Nice having me again.
Yep, it's always fun talking to you. And I hope that next year is an even better year for movies for you, because even though there are some good ones this year, there's always room for improvement, I say.
Well, I have to say, I don't have anything close to a number one for next year yet. I haven't seen enough stuff, but I do have a possible worst of the year already.
Oh, yeah? Which one's that?
Yeah. I won't mention it. It hasn't come out yet, so I won't mention it.
Okay. Gotcha. Well,
I saw it earlier tonight, though, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I have nothing to add. Do you, Ethan?
I do not.
Well, once again, thank you very much for being on, Ed.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Well, until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly. Shut all the greatest things.